After 25 years in corporate, I'm currently taking time off work to reflect, reinvent, and rejuvenate. This sabbatical was 10 years in the making, after deciding that I didn't want to go through another brutal company restructure. I'm pursuing my own interests and experimenting with how I want to spend my time into the future. Welcome to a new series of Unchange podcasts. In these episodes, I'm talking to people who have taken breaks from work for various reasons. I want to understand why they did it, what they did on their breaks, what they learned from the experience, and how they are taking the lessons learned from the experience back into their work lives. My guest today is Omri van Zyl. Welcome in the studio, Omri.
Thanks, Beatrice.
Can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you're doing at the moment?
Okay, I'm the CEO of Russell Stone Capital. The Russell Stone Group is quite a big player in the agriculture sector. My job is to look for expansion plans, corporate finance. We've got our own internal funds that we deploy on investments. We work with the banks. We work with international financiers to penetrate the agriculture sector in different ways. That might sound strange, but that's what we do. So we know the sector very well. I know the sector very well. I basically grew up in it. And that's what I'm currently doing.
So you took a break or a sabbatical in the past, and how did you know that you wanted to take a break?
So I've taken a lot of them, actually, not extended ones, but so I've got a really big appetite for adventure. And my whole life, actually, I've been traveling and exploring the off-the-beaten-track kind of places in the world. So throughout my career, I would take a month to go somewhere exotic, do something really adventurous. So in and amongst was going to Brazil, going to the Amazon, going to Peru. I traveled Southeast Asia extensively, backpacked through Vietnam, backpacked through Borneo, backpacked through Thailand. I went there 3 times, actually. I did the hammock tour, which was basically lying in a hammock, drinking beer on the beach and getting brown. So I did that. That lowered my heartbeat to about 50 beats a minute. Probably one of the most memorable things that I've done, although most of them are memorable, is I have done the Camino in Spain. So I needed a break, and I did that. So I think throughout my career, that's kind of kept me sane, you know, kept me reflective all the time and maybe mindful of where I am and where I want to be and reset myself in certain ways. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the background.
And have you ever had to take a break where you were changing careers or where you had time to do an extended break?
Yes, I did. When I did the Camino, I just after that, I changed my career completely. So I went from a corporate, I worked at Deloitte, so I went from there to AgriSA, and it was unsure where I was going to end up after that happened, or before I took the break. And it's kind of serendipitous because everything just kind of fell in place, I guess, after I took the break. And the break helped me to reset. I mean, sometimes you're so kind of entwined in your environment and you know, in the expectations you have in yourself and others have of you, that you don't really see the wood from the trees. So when I did that, I kind of resetted myself completely. And I mean, literally, I walked 470 kilometers. I didn't exercise before that or practice. So after the first 32 kilometers the first day, the next day I couldn't move. My muscles were so sore and places I didn't even know, you know. So I took my backpack and I threw everything out. I had two underpants, two short pants, a long trouser and two short ones. And the expensive hiking shoes I had, I threw away as well. So I did that with my Crocs, actually. And the next day I did like 6 kilometers. I was so, so sore. And then the next day I did, I think, 12. And then I went up. And after the Camino, I could walk 30, 40 kilometers a day. No problem. So what that does, it's a walking and kind of meditating. So it's extremely meditative and kind of focuses your mind because of the rhythm of the walking. I went on my own, so I didn't know anybody there. I didn't even know how it worked. So I made a lot of friends along the way. And it's a bit of a spiritual experience because I used to go into all the little churches, meditate a bit. You know, you'd see people sitting under a tree meditating. So everybody goes there for various reasons. For me, it was just to switch off completely. No cell phone. Everything was conversational. You would pitch up at a pension, book it in. Okay, the first couple of days I slept in a albergue, is what they call it, with like 15 other oaks snoring the crap out of me. So I was like, this is not going to work. So I booked myself into my own rooms. And I met so many people from so many different cultures there, you know. So it was, you know, it was a very enlightening experience. But I had no real idea what I was going to do when I got back.
Mm.
And it's as if the universe kind of conspired to put me in a certain place. And I actually got 3 job offers at the same time. And one of them was with AgriSA. And I decided to do that. So I became the CEO of AgriSA after Deloitte. And yeah, that put me on that journey.
So how did you know that you wanted to leave? What made you, what was sort of the final tipping point for you to leave? And why did you decide to do the Camino? What was, why was that the thing you wanted to do?
I've known about the Camino. I read up on it, and I kind of have an idea of what it entails. I think I was in a very, very heavy corporate structure. Risk and compliance was becoming crazy. I hear it's even worse now. Thank goodness I don't have that at the moment. I think I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a pioneer. I don't like rules, regulations, risk requirements, you know, all of that stuff. And I'm not good at it. I'm not good at admin. So I realized that I spend half my time managing risks that impede on clear business transactions. And I think that kind of weighed me down, because I wasn't playing in my strength spaces. I was dying, literally. And so I knew I had to do something. And I decided to do the Camino. I've done the Incontrol before. So that was also a nice experience. I had a couple of camel safaris in my life. So I went into the Sahara Desert in Morocco. Did a camel safari there. I also did the same in the Thar Desert in India. But what that does is it takes your mind and your reality and it alters it completely, especially if you're in a different country, because you don't really understand the culture, the customs. I promise you, backpacking through India for a month was very interesting. I liked it. People either like or hate it. But I did the things that I love. I love deserts. I went into the Himalayas. I went to Himachal Pradesh. I went to Dharamsala, Cloud Ganj. I thought I was going to sit there and meditate with Buddhist monks for a week, until I did it for one day. I was like, no one speaks English. I can't eat this food. And they beat you with a stick if you don't sit still enough. And I was like, shh, this is not, you know, I'm Afrikaans speaking. So if someone beats you with a stick, normally, you know, they're looking for trouble. So that romantic bird flew out of you know, Elizabeth Gilbert's book of, what's that book's name that she wrote?
Eat, Pray, Love.
Eat, Pray, Love.
Yeah.
So that whole meditation thing, look, if you're a rock star soldier, you might be able to endure it. But so anyway, I was there, and it's a funny story. I took a walk one day and I came up in this hill station. They call it, the English built the hill stations there. And there was this family sitting there, and the guy invited me to have lunch with him. And I was like, yes, this is really interesting. So lovely lunch, you know, after eating vegetarian food for 3 weeks. I'm a carnivore. And we had the loveliest lunch, and they invited me to stay. So I stayed there for 3 days. So the guy turned out to be the manager of the Rolling Stones. And I had so many interesting conversations with him and with his family, actually. And that kind of gives you a completely different perspective on life. You know, you learn a lot from that old culture, from that serenity, from that whole environment. So those are some of the things that I've done, just to alter my current I've always done it, but just to alter my current reality. Because even if you are in South Africa, it differs, because I used to be a safari guide in Botswana as well. So that was another career change. So after I studied, I went overseas, like many people at the time. I spent a year in London, selling cooking pots to Nigerian and Ghanaian families and traveling. So when I've had enough of that London vibe, I completely hated the weather. It's very difficult to adapt in a place that's not your own. Like I said, I'm Afrikaans speaking. I love my language. I love the humor and the metaphors. But I think what killed me there was the weather. I'm a sun person. I love the sun. And then I decided, listen, I said to myself, I'm going to take 2 years off, because I didn't completely know what I wanted to do. And then I said, okay, after that, I want to do something adventurous. So I became a safari guide in Botswana, but not like a jeep jockey. I actually did I worked for Caribou Safaris. The first 3 months, they put me under a Land Rover's bonnet. And I worked in a mechanics workshop. We ate bologna and white bread every day with Tabasco sauce on it. I couldn't swing a spanner to begin with. But there, it's an essential skill. I mean, if you can't fix a car when it breaks down on these type of safaris, you spend 14 days in the bush, deep trouble. So I did the mechanic thing, and everybody was laughing at me, but I think I outshined them on the academic front. So I got my professional guide's license. I started guiding. So that taught me a lot about nature, right? So I know the birds, I know the animals, I really know the birds and the animals, not like, you know, guessing, is that a carp, a mossy or not? So I got my adventure outlet. It's extremely hard work to do that. You take 14 guests into the bush, they don't know anything. You're surrounded by wild animals, there's no fencing, elephants, lions, leopards, etc., hippos, big threat. And it's just you and the guide. And I was like 24 years old. I was like, and you have this people's life in your hands. So I loved doing that, but I knew that was not where I wanted to end up. But that taught me a whole different skill set of, it taught me nature, but really, I mean, I looked like an animal when I worked there. I mean, I only showered like once a week. It taught me about mechanics. It taught me about people, a lot about people, different nationalities, general, you know, how people are. People are not the same. They're not the same in Germany as in France or in Australia or in South Africa or in America. And that actually kind of internationalized my worldview a bit. And then I came back and I did my articles, and then I ended up working at Deloitte. So I think that was, it's kind of a, you would always say it's a bit of a bastardized life philosophy, because on the one hand, you have this ambition driving you to do something corporate or something, you know, professionally important. And on the other hand, you have your innate adventurous spirit or your artistic spirit or whatever you want to call that. And those two are kind of, and I think in one's career, if you have to find a balance between the two. If you don't, one of them is going to, not one of them, I think mostly it's the money earning part that eats you up. And there's very few people that actually can do what they love and make money at it, because we're all different and we all have different kind of approaches to life. So I think that's more or less the wheelhouse that my travels came in. And my career breaks as well.
So your outlet for resting and for getting away from everything has always been some sort of adventure.
Yes, it has been.
Yeah, I can totally identify with that. And I think I decided really, really early on with the very, very first corporate restructure that we went through. I was in China at that point in time, and already at that point knew I didn't want to get completely trapped in corporate, but then you get trapped in corporates because you earn money. Okay, so you earn money and the money helps you have adventures, but then you never have enough leave to be able to actually go on those adventures.
Yeah.
You know, so it's sort of like a little hamster wheel that you get trapped on.
Yeah, like a vicious cycle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does. If you think back to all of the breaks that you've taken, what were some of the biggest lessons that you learned from them?
Well, I think every time I travel, I went to China end of last year. Every time I travel, I realize my current reality is not defined in the world. If you go to China, there's 1.4 billion people. I mean, there's more people in China than the whole of Africa and America combined. That puts you in a completely different mind space. But it's actually so funny, the moment you get into back 2 weeks later, you're back into that. I think it's maybe a form of classical conditioning, that whole, you get back in the seat and you just row on. And sometimes you have to alter position. And I think that's very scary. It was for me always scary to change. I mean, we come from a day where people are very loyal. They're very kind of committed. And that sometimes is a good thing, but sometimes it's a bad thing. So my current job, when I spoke to Russell about it, he said that he would never compromise his freedom. And that actually made me think a lot, because you always think that you want to make enough money to get freedom, but you don't think that if you have freedom, you can actually make a lot more money doing that. Or if you do something in your sweet spot, or you do something your talents are really acquired to. So that's always the dynamic. And I think everybody thinks that, listen, I need to pay the bills. I need to pay my house. I need to, pay for the kids to go to school. And then when you do at the end, people talk about retirement and when I retire and whatever, then you've lived your life, right? So that's that space in between. So I think, living in that freedom, I mean, incidentally, the guy that studied with me, that was my roommate at Stellenbosch, I was in Wilgenhof, he's like a flogger. He goes around the country, makes all these flogs. His name is Chris White, makes all these flogs. It's actually, our careers couldn't have been more different. He plays the guitar, he makes art, cooks, he does all that type of stuff. So on the one hand, he's got a lot of freedom, but he would never have fitted in a corporate career, ever. I knew that when he cooked for me and my girlfriend at the time wearing a skirt, that was like he's really, he's always been a bit of an alternative guy. So yeah, I think that's probably the philosophical dilemma that I think most people have, almost all people have.
And it's almost difficult if there's other people to consider as well. Mm-hmm. If you've got long-standing relationships, or you have a family that you need to support, or there's bills to pay, like you say. So how did you navigate your way around all of that? And how did your family members react to you wanting to take breaks? And most of them, it seems, solo.
Luckily, my wife at the time, she did some of the traveling with me, and we could afford to travel. That was lucky. We didn't have children. And I think I've always made budgeting a priority in terms of my travel. It's not something I would just do willy-nilly. Especially in the beginning, if you don't have a lot of money, when you just start a family, you have to kind of really budget to do that. But it builds in a bit of discipline as to how do you actually afford to do what you love. So my family, I still went to the army. I was a parabat. And after that, I studied, like I said, in Wilgenhof, in Stellenbosch residence. And we, at the time, this was in 1994, we actually, one of the guys, his father gave us a Mercedes truck. And we completely took out all the seats. We put in train seats, massive speakers, a big fridge for beer. And we left Stellenbosch and we went up to the source of the Nile in Uganda and came all the way back. At the time, no cell phone. Oldest guy in the group was like 23. And there was 19 of us going up in that truck. This was just on independence. So no one knew what Africa was, a bit of a dark continent. I mean, I didn't speak to my parents for 2.5 months. So we kind of grew up in a time where there was very little control of what you are doing. So I have an adventurous family. So, I mean, my parents just, they know me. So they knew I would come back somehow. And I think those were times where there was very little control. You had a lot more freedom. I mean, imagine today, you're away for 2.5 months and no one can speak to you or phone you or WhatsApp you or, you know, email you or whatever. I mean, there wasn't even email at the time. So it's important to be true to yourself and for people to give you that freedom to be true to yourself. Otherwise, you'll always be unhappy.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. During your breaks, did you have time for like introspection or self-reflection? And what did that look like for you?
I did. So going to India, to McLeod Ganj and Dharamsala was kind of, I wanted to do a kind of a Buddhist retreat, which the wheels came off very quickly when I saw that this was not actually what I thought it was. I actually went to a Buddhist retreat here in South Africa and did a meditation course. So I meditate every day, most days. So it's important to bring that mindfulness into play. And I think people often underestimate the value of meditation. So that is something that I've learned a long time ago. And that has really worked for me. So you need certain techniques or skills. You need to acquire certain skills to do certain things. So I think that was the one. I also read a lot. When I did my MBA, they taught us speed reading, so I can read quite quickly. And that's something I did quite a lot at the time. Understanding the nature of what it's like to be a person and how you can actually use that to your own advantage. So there's a lot of guys that find it difficult to cope with variety of things, but they don't have the tools to do that. So when you have the tools, you need the discipline, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't have the discipline, you have the best tools, but you can't apply it. So it's a bit of a combination. This is not difficult. I mean, it's like meditating 10 minutes a day makes a big difference. Taking a walk for 20 minutes a day makes a big difference. And almost in my life, I exercised. So that was always part of my regime. And I play golf on Saturday. So that's I think, what kept me sane.
I think some people will tell you that golf is not meditative.
Oh, it's so meditative to me. I love it. I love it. I get so angry with myself on the golf course, but I go every Saturday. But it's and you remember, golf is a sport. To me, it's a sport. A lot of people think, oh, he just goes to the golf course to drink beer and, you know, tell dirty jokes with his buddies. It's actually, the group that I'm playing is very competitive and they know golf. So it's not, there's an Afrikaans word that I won't say now, but to us, it's a sport. I often think people think it's just a hobby. It's not. Yeah, that makes me happy. I love sport, love it. Yeah, there's various angles to, I think, what you can use to explore the tools and the habits that would actually create an environment where you can calm yourself down, refocus, etc. So I did my 2 degrees while I worked full time, and I always visualized how I would perform. Writing a test, studying. And the more I visualized it, the more it actually happened. I'm a Golden Key scholar. I mean, working full time and studying in the evening is not a joke. So I did my LLB that way, and I also did my MBA that way. That visualization of something different, I still do it today. I have a vision board. I look at that vision board every day, and when I go to sleep, I imagine that and explore that. When I meditate in my mind, and even it's the same vision, you know, later on that stuff gets kind of entrenched in your subconscious. That feeds back into your conscious world. It makes you braver. If you see evidence of that stuff, I mean, for example, I don't have children, but I've always visualized myself having children. My baby is coming the 15th of October. And at some point you were like, am I ever going to get there? So I'm a firm believer in intent, mm-hmm. You know. Intent, but with some visualization, I think is important.
I'm completely with you there. For me, every decision needs to be deliberate. Okay, deliberate in working into a specific goal. And for me, this whole sabbatical was a goal. It was something that I really wanted to do, wanted to get to. and you just make it happen. You know, I had 10 years to make it happen, and eventually you get there. Mm. So it sounds to me as if your breaks or sabbaticals are sort of woven into the way that you live your life.
Yeah, they are.
If you had to give anybody advice on how to do that, you know, how to be able to take, it's something that I call the sabbatical mindset, you know, take that and weave it into your daily life to make it part of who you are. Mm. How do you manage to do that? Or are you very deliberate about weaving it in?
The first thing is, I think for me, was the visualization aspect. Thinking about it, in the beginning, you don't believe it. You just fake it. You say, this is what I really want to do. If the sky was blue and I could do anything and I had so much money, what do I want to do? I want to do this. You put that thing and you on your board and you start imagining it. You start looking at the different angles of it. And what later happens is you reprogram your brain, all right? And then when you reprogram your brain, you attract all kinds of different things. Sometimes you're forced to do it, like in a restructuring. You're forced to do it. I mean, you don't want to get restructured. You're forced to do it. Through COVID, lots of people got restructured. And then you're sitting there and you're like, what the hell am I going to do now? You know, where am I now? And I think for me, what has worked is actually going back to that visualization. I actually do it with golf as well, but it doesn't always come off. You know, I play the 18 holes in my mind before I go to sleep, and then I just screw it up the next day. So that doesn't always work. But I think so that daily, it's always good to exercise. I'm a healthy eater generally. So it's not like I'm a vegan or a vegetarian or, you know, any of that. But eating healthy and trying to have a healthy lifestyle. People are different. Everybody likes different things. But I always say, if you imagine yourself at the pinnacle of doing that, what would that look like? What does your environment look like? Where are you sitting? What are you doing? Who are you talking to? You know, all those kind of things. So from a daily life perspective, I also think it's important, because now if I plan a trip, I mean, I sent a message to my wife earlier of a island holiday, and I've been to Mauritius too many times, but let's say in Zanzibar or whatever, with a baby, of course, that gives you something to manifest, to focus on, to look forward to. Because let's be honest, I mean, in daily life, can I say, if you're really mindful, you know, every moment feels like nirvana, all that's nonsense. I mean, the Buddhist philosophy is life is suffering. That is the philosophy. So you take out the worst right there, and everything that you get is a bonus. That, I think, is important to have that kind of stuff that you look forward to during the year. And then planning events in between, because you can't just once a year go and do something you like and then you go back and do something you hate and then you go. So you have to do it continuously. So I said to my wife, every month, obviously before she became pregnant or I made her pregnant, every month we want to do something nice. If we go to the Magaliesberg, we do something. If we go to the Bushveld, I mean, we've got so much stuff to do up here in Cape Town and everywhere. So I do four things every year. I go and hunt because I love the bush. I go fly fishing. I go to Pater Noster, which I love. And what's the fifth one? I want to go to the ocean and swim in the ocean. So those are the four things that I kind of want to do every year. And that stimulates me.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you mentioned that when you're on a break, you spend time to meditate and to read books and those sort of things. And I've realized now, with having a number of conversations on people who are taking breaks, that the things that we actually want to do more of, which is meditating, reading, walking, spending time in nature, spending time with family, all of those things don't actually cost you any money. Okay, so at the end of the day, it might cost you money to get somewhere, some adventure or a new place, but the things that people actually want to spend their time on and do more of while they're working don't actually cost a lot of money.
So I'm a big believer in Kaizen, right? I've always been a big fan of it. And that's about the continuous improvement of work environment, manufacturing environments. You probably know it as well. But you apply that to your own life. Right. And it doesn't have to be perfect at the beginning. It's never perfect. But then you chip away at it. You chip away at it slowly. You make it better. You get better. You work on something else. So that's how I kind of think one can evolve spiritually, mentally, and physically throughout this kind of life journey. And I've seen guys play golf with me. The guy did yoga, and everybody, Andre, everybody thought he was like not even a midlife crisis, age crisis or whatever. And that guy, he was 80. He hit the ball further than almost all the other oaks because he was supple, strong. His reflex muscles were firing. And so that's what he did. But it was to get to the solution of him, you know, not deteriorating when he gets old. And I'm probably going to do the same thing, you know, yoga or Pilates or whatever.
Yeah, I listened to this podcast with Dr. Peter Attia and Tim Ferriss, and they spoke about the Centenarian Olympics. And in the Centenarian Olympics is you think about all the things you want to do in your 90s and you start practicing for them now already. So if you want to be able to lift a 7 kg suitcase into an overhead compartment, you start doing weight training that helps you to do that. So if you want to be able to carry your shopping from the car. And I think if you live your life with that sort of mindset of how do I want to be in my 80s and 90s, and you start doing that exercise now already and eating and everything that goes with it, the suppleness and all of that, I think that's a good way to be deliberate about almost designing the life that you want. Yeah. So, and also I've started hiking now on Wednesday mornings with a Wednesday hiking group, and they're all in their 60s, 70s and 80s. Yeah. And I aspire to be them because they're so strong and they're much faster than me. They walk up the mountain much quicker than I do. So I want to be them when I grow up one day. So what is your next big break that you're planning? And what are you going to do in it? And if you think about all of the previous breaks you've had, what would you do differently this time around?
Yeah, look, all of these plans were before my wife became pregnant. So now all of a sudden, it's going to be like a sleeping break somewhere in the middle of the summer somewhere. Look, it's different if you have children. So it's a girl. Her name is Julia. So I want to kind of, you know, get her into my lifestyle and not shape my whole lifestyle around her, which I think is very important. I mean, my sister's done it. She lived in Rwanda, in Burkina Faso, in Kenya, and Zambia. They've done it. And so my next break would probably be a beach break, to be honest. Maybe Mozambique, maybe somewhere like that. So I love the ocean. I love lying in the sun. I love swimming. You know, so something like that.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention which we haven't spoken about yet in this podcast?
I think Russell made me think a lot about freedom. What does that mean? I mean, we all have insecurities. We're all different. But if you have the freedom to say no sometimes, you actually gain more power, right? Because we do so much to please and kind of commit to our careers and work in yourself to death and, you know, having the blue kind of under your eyes, or your eyes are really droopy. But he's actually a bit of a role model to me because he works from a place of complete freedom. If he doesn't want to do something, he doesn't do it. If he does want to do something, he does it. And if something doesn't sound right to him, he says no. And if something, his yes is his yes and his no type of thing. But he's unique in the sense that he's not trying to please the whole world. You know, he's trying to do something that's special for him. And that gives him energy. And I think that's the other thing, is what actually gives you energy? You need to figure that out and do more of that. And what takes away your energy? Because we always ask that in job applications. I mean, today I've got two. That's why I almost didn't make it. It's that question about what gives you energy. Because not every environment gives people the same energy, right? And it comes from him and the Dion and the company philosophy, where they started 20 years ago with nothing. Today, the business is a 16 billion rand business. I mean, that's in agriculture. That's a serious business. So that's kind of the philosophy of the workplace that I'm now. It's completely different to corporate, or, you know, reporting to boards and audit committees and social and ethics committees and transformation committees. And so I did that for long enough. But it gives you a sense of freedom to actually do the things that you love more. And I think very few employers actually do that, mm-hmm. you know. So listen, okay, what is it that you normally, when you go, they need to actually appoint people in positions that gives them energy. That's what we do. So, yeah, I just wanted to add that because I think it's important. And if you're doing something that's not giving you energy, you need to take a break, reflect on it, talk to people. I mean, Brand Pretorius was my mentor for a long time. He's an extremely, extremely wise guy. And he helped me through a lot of it. So it also helps to have a mentor, to have people you can talk to that have actually gone through what you want to go through mm-hmm. or that you are going through.
I'm a big believer in coaches. I mean, if you want to lose weight, you get a coach. If you want to play better golf, you get a coach to help you. So I think it's actually quite important to use coaches also just for your life.
And absolutely.
To have people to be able to soundboard off.
Yeah, the thing is, like, you know, there's all these mysteries about coaches and psychologists and sports psychologists. If you get tuberculosis, you go to a doctor and get it fixed, right? If you have a knee surgery, you do the same thing. But if your soul is sick, many people don't do anything about it. I'm like, what the hell? That's almost more important than knee surgery, you know, in a lot of respects, because you only have one life. You only have got maybe 80, 85 years here. Get that stuff fixed. Understand. Test the universe. Test alternatives. Do something completely different, you know. See how that works for you. I think that's important.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. I read somewhere we only get 4,000 weeks to live. And how do you want to... And for me, I decided after I'd spent 800 weeks at the same company.
True.
But that was enough. That was enough for one company time to do something different.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks very much for joining me in the studio. It's been lovely to speak to you.
Thanks, Pietro.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.